Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? Natalie is still in.
Stop! No, you
wow!
Can't say that.
Wow! Could be anything.
Could be anything. It's true. What's good, internet? Welcome to the holidays. Welcome to Waypoint Radio.
I was with some other friends. Like I've.
Well, now. No one
are you fucking?
About.
That's deleted.
We deleted that. Bit.
I don't did want to.
Well, now we have to delete this.
Murder me.
A murderer.
I don't know, but could.
All right, take three. Can you just bleep all those things?
Yeah, I will.
Keep it all
gonna... We're just gonna run from here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Welcome to the holiday episodes here of Waypoint Radio. We are looking back at the year and at the decade, for all of our favorite video games, and also tomorrow, at some point this week, some other stuff, also non-video game things.
If only the audience had the preamble that we had.
We had
leading
an
up to
incredible
this podcast. You'll never hear it.
You'll never hear it. Too many personal details.
But
from one. Natalie Watson and her times in Final Fantasy 14.
I've been having some times.
How many times?
I think I'm at like 265 hours now.
Okay.
When
she told us 300. We get on the podcast. Uh-huh. It's 260.
Hold on, though.
It's a great event.
When did you start?
September 27th.
Very good. Those are the voices.
What is the date? Today is the December 6th.
Patrick
just so
Klepik,
everyone do the math.
Ricardo Contreras, Rob Zachney here with a beer. Also, I have a beer. Cheers.
Cheers.
Wait, what the fuck? Where are the beers?
You got to get one. Okay. It's on the.
Which one do you want? You want the Christmas? You want the Two Hearted Ale?
The celebration.
Disease.
I can do this
Fresh
one.
Hop.
It's a.
Careful. There's
careful,
a little.
It's
careful.
It's going to be fine. Just got to be
it's
careful.
Fine. It's fine.
We are here to talk about.
Hold on. We got to talk about last night. It's short.
What happened last night?
So
the best.
Well, for one, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Bears. Now, by the time people hear this, the Bears will have already been.
They're in the playoffs.
They're in the playoffs.
So are the Eagles.
They ran
with
the table.
Worst record.
We're going to meet again.
And
no, we won.
Oh,
we
my
won.
God.
Well, no, we could because you could win your division.
We would host a wild card game.
Fuck, that'd be great.
For that, I wish we were still here. It's not going to happen. The Eagles are going to figure out how to fuck it up even further.
So are the Bears. They're going to lose the Packers in a week and it'll
and
fall apart.
Be over.
Anyway, Rob and I, just we're out here recording these podcasts in person. Just of all the fact that Thursday night football happened to be the Bears, mm-hmm. and then we're in town together and we're like, this is awesome. Like, we're going to go watch the game together. And I allowed Rob to pick where we went, and he picked a good place. Like, it's going to be a little.
He said it like it was
you
an
give me
exception
the eye
to the rule.
As though there hasn't been multiple instances of you being given responsibility over where to go, and then things go awry.
Everyone has a great time.
Eventually. We get there.
So he picks a great place. And we get, and he looked up specifically, like, we needed a sports bar, right? Like,
yeah.
Not just a TV on, but a place that would, like, eventually switch the audio to listen to the game. And we...
What is that? Why are you
showing
your
head?
No,
I'm saying it is not that sort of place, sadly.
No, it is a place that people go when they say, like, I want to go to a sports bar.
You don't
and so they're
the
showing
towel.
Sports, but no one is watching
Patrick,
the sports.
There's a detail I didn't tell you.
See?
When I
okay,
looked
all,
at
uh-huh, pause. Uh-huh, so, uh-huh. like, all his income, like, giving me the shade, like, this is it. There's always a fucking butt.
The next day,
so,
also.
He hasn't told me this yet.
The thing that convinced me it was a sports bar was that, indeed, on their website, they did sort of foreground what a good sports bar they are for Six Nations Rugby. Which, in retrospect, maybe does not imply they're a sports bar for North American football or any other American sport. But might be for the sort of people who make a point of being into Six Nations rugby.
So this is an important point because we get there. They got a nice beer selection. We got a good spot where we can see a ton of TVs.
Sure.
We
big both, TVs, presumably.
Big enough. Big enough. They could have been bigger.
A lot of them.
But a lot of them. So it made up for the lack of size. But we realized quickly, like, it's like they're doing the pre-show, and it's like the sound's not coming on. And then, like, we ask the, you know, the guy, you know, the waiter, and he's like, is there any chance we could turn the sound on? And he's like, he gave us a look of, like, do you know where you are? Like he's like, I'll ask. We never got an answer, but that was the answer we got.
The answer was, we'll ask.
So we're like, shit, we already ordered food. We had a beer. I was like, well, maybe we'll just watch it silently and we'll like go, I'll call some other place and ask if they have the sound down and we'll just walk or take a cab. And then I don't know how this occurred to me, but in a fit of like 2.5 beers in, I just look at Rob and I was like, I think I know how to solve this.
Patrick Lathe of Heavens, a fucking app into being.
And I had heard about this app years ago, and it was just like, I don't have it still on my phone. I don't even know what it's fucking called. And I just started searching through my folders, and I looked at my TV folder, and it was with Tunify?
Yeah, I think so.
The pitch is, you point it at what it's for, being at a sports bar, and if you can't get the audio on and you want to listen to the game, you point it at the TV, and then you can listen to the audio.
What?
What?
Austin,
excuse me?
This thing fucking worked from across the room.
No.
Like, I was far... Like, Patrick, you were zooming in trying to, like, fill the frame. Yeah.
Is it a mic? What is it?
So I believe I believe what it is doing, it is looking for graphics.
Right.
Like a match. Fox logo. Or it's right. Like, it sees football. It scans for what's on football.
Right.
And it pulls up some web stream. But, like, it pulls up the Fox broadcast audio, and it even has a little slider for latency, so you can, like, line up, like, their voices in real time to get it to work. And so we're these fucking assholes.
I'm going to beep this. This is Yahoo, this is Yahoo anime. Again.
What?
They're going to shut – you're going to – we're going to shut down.
I'm going to make sure to beep this.
This has been around for years.
Is this legal?
So it was Yahoo anime.
Yeah.
I don't know when I'm ever going to use this again. This was like a – wow. I've had this for years, and it was like a once-in-a-lifetime moment where and we, like, you know, like when you go to, like, any sports game and, like, people want to hear the like their local sports announcers. So you'll see, like, the older guys, like with, like, a headphones on listening to the announcers, even though they're at the game.
Yeah.
We were those guys in a bar, and the Bears started crushing the Cowboys. Just, like, I'm, like, Rob is both thinks it's funny and is also increasingly annoyed that I'm standing up on my seat and, like, cheering, like, actively rolling.
That's what you meant by embarrassed.
There was clearly a moment where, like, I was getting up to stand up and you were just like, Patrick.
This is like last year when we went out to team dinner for the holidays, or maybe that was for the stream, and Patrick got that, like, dirty stare down at that restaurant from those two ladies who left because of how loud
Patrick was. We were spending a lot of money at that restaurant.
You don't remember that?
I don't remember ladies staring at us.
There was a lady exactly. I don't remember that either because we were doing just fine.
We were having fun. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, Ralph. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But you were being really obnoxious at the bar that we were at for PAX in Boston.
Oh, that's true.
Fair.
That's true.
Rob and I were like,
oh, yeah.
In Cotto, you too.
God, remember that?
You know,
sometimes
you just gotta live it up a little.
Remember you were gonna leave and that guy started playing? They started playing a fucking, was it a Radiohead song?
With the Sonic Hat.
With the guy with the Sonic Hat. Remember we were like, wow, I'm surprised you never heard Radiohead. Da, 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 da. And we started to leave and then they started playing literally the Radiohead song that we were talking about.
Oh, that was wild.
That was wild. That good was trip.
Good trip.
Yeah.
That's when you sat on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick keeps getting increasingly hype as Mitchell Trubisky turns in the performance of his life. Like, it was everything you've wanted from the Bears for years. Like, just demolishing the Cowboys.
And that's also the Cowboys, who, even though they're a bad team at this point, they're still the fucking Cowboys.
Yeah.
Like, you still get an extra little bit of joy.
And they're a good team with a bad season, which I think is an important difference. And it's just, like, really good. You're starting to get the reaction shots of dudes on the sidelines looking like,
they're yelling
how
at
did
each
my
other.
Life end up in this? Like, how did it come to this moment?
Right. Not just demolishing the team on the field, but, like, driving a wedge between people.
Oh, you're seeing, Jason Witten, who, like, retired from the NFL, went to become a commentator, was convinced to come back to the Cowboys. He's just screaming on the sidelines. And you're like, we're destroying people.
Yeah.
Like,
Jason Garrett, like, crumbled into dust and blew away live on
and Patrick is like, woo!
So, but the other thing is, this
crowd.
This crowd is actively sports hostile. Like, people are
this
there.
This is not Six Nations rugby.
They are there for a quiet, like, fake English pub vibe.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And here we are.
Crucial, like, detail we have left out.
Oh, yeah.
So we're looking. The Bear. So the game starts, and the Bears immediately give up, like, a touchdown. And we're like, ah, fuck, this is going to be one of those games. We're actually just going to have to sit here and talk to each other and pretend the game is... I mean this in the sense of, like, we're not going to enjoy the game anymore. Yeah. We're just going to have to... It'll just be
maybe
there.
Maybe we'll leave at the half.
Yeah. Then the Bears just go on a tear through the rest of the game and it'll just crush them. And we're, you know, we're screaming, we're having fun and having a good time. And I remember early when we sat down, I remarked on it. I was like, this is a sign of a good bar. Like, this is fun. And I looked at the menu, and the menu said... Mystery beer and shot, $8.
Bruh.
So,
and I pointed it out, not thinking in any world is Rob on board with this. Like, it's a cute thing for me to say.
But then Mitch Trubisky threw an interception and a bad one. He tried to throw it out of bounds.
Yeah.
But he fell short.
Out of bounds.
He fell short of out of bounds
to the defense.
Now that's you know, Mitch Trubisky. I know.
You know what's inbounds, Austin? Cornerbacks.
Yeah.
And he turns to me. He's like, "We're getting one of those." And I'm like, "Oh, look, not me."
What'd you get?
So, one, we order it, and the guy just like, not amused. Just like, "You really? You assholes are going to order this?
The sports vibe, this is just an atmosphere thing. No, this is get it.
People don't actually order this.
Right.
And so we order it, and then it takes a while for us to get it. And then.
Because they're trying to find the brown paper bags.
Yes. And when it said Mr. Beer and a shot, I thought I got to choose the shot, and I was like, I don't like doing shots, but I was like, I can do whiskey.
And then
I could
shot.
And then I could sip it. I was like, oh dude, like if we get almost anything other than whiskey, like
you're gonna get sick.
Yeah, I was like, I can't do that. Like,
we have to record a bunch of podcasts.
Well, no,
today.
But literally, like I just won't be able to drink it. Like, I'm just gonna have to dump it. Like, it's just not gonna work out. Well, like, let's see what happens. And then I noticed out of the corner of my eye, I was like, ah, shit. I've been to one of these places before back in my 20s. Like, when they give you a free shot, what they're giving you is, like, a small mixed drink. And so what we got the first time was something lemonade-y, which I think later explains
I think it was a bee's knees.
Which later explains why Rob was like, the right side of my stomach hurts a lot. And I was like, yeah, because I think one of those shots was, like, something deeply acidic that we took. And then we did it one more time when they were on a tear. Both times, let's be clear, prompted by Rob Zachney. And he goes, we're getting another one of those. He's like, cool, let's go.
Let's go. Let's
and the second one thus put an end to the run of these because we got something that was much bigger and tasted like marshmallows.
And fuck
ew,
you. It's like marshmallows, pineapple, and fuck you.
Yeah.
That's not a mix I want.
No, it was bad.
But the Bears won.
Bears won.
They're all happy.
And actually, it turned out well because being mixed drink shots, there wasn't that much alcohol. It was just like, they were just good
sugar mostly.
And we got good beers, actually.
Oh, yeah. No,
and we paid way less for the beer because that's always the trick. Because, like, you can't pick.
Yeah, it's an all right, bar.
But they had no bad beer.
Right, exactly.
Like, yes.
Like, we might not have gotten what
I think you
necessarily...
got a Tecate, or we got a Pacifico.
The second round, they were trying to break us a little bit. So,
I'll drink.
Oh, my God. That one, I got the sour ale. I hate sour ales.
Yeah.
They knew.
He got a ghost beer. And apparently, that's a thing, and a bunch of our followers on Twitter were like, oh, that's delicious. And
what
I was like,
ghost
does not seem
which was
like,
good. Right after Rob, I taste it and I was like, Rob, I don't mean to be like weird, ask you to drink my beer, but like you need to taste this. And he had it and was like, oh boy.
It was so like, you know how you like
face puckering?
No. It is important to be able to categorize things.
Sure.
Like just to feel comfortable.
What is an immersive sim, for instance?
But you need to like okay, I know, like, roughly what is in this. Right. I know the flavors. Like, this is the thing I put in my mouth.
Sure.
I know roughly what it tastes of. This triggered no associations or memories whatsoever.
That's why it's a ghost beer.
Dude, it was terrifying. It was like drinking void.
Wow.
Weird, fucked up, sour void.
You're honestly selling me on
it. Yeah, I'm interested.
Yeah, it was like, this is a thing that exists in the Dishonored world.
Right.
Like, absolutely. like, this is like...
That's why it's called a ghost. It's like you get a ghost rating at the end of an immersive sim level. You get seen.
And also, it doesn't call itself a beer. It was like, it's a malt beverage. Which, now...
That's...
Implies things, but apparently this is a well-regarded brand. So, like, it is like a type of beer, I guess.
What was
but
it called?
You took the photo.
Long Island Slow.
Oh, that's a good name.
It is a good name.
What's it called?
I think Long Island Slow or Island Slow.
It's a good name.
It's Tunify, I don't know.
Wow.
So anyway, Tunify. You can aim it at a TV and you can listen to the broadcast. Yeah. Probably not like HBO, but for sports.
You should try it with HBO, though.
See what happens.
Let us know.
Wow.
I think what happens is because one time when I aimed it, it didn't quite catch it. And it's like, couldn't find the channel. Oh, the other thing you can do is called QuickTune. And I don't know how it's what it's doing, but it just brought up a couple of broadcast feeds you could just pick from. And then it would send it to your headphones.
Yeah, it worked. But it was great. There were a couple of people who left the bar, as I heard. You did not hear this. There was a couple who left the bar. And
see how often this happens with me and Rob?
Yeah, I
this
do.
This is our relationship.
And I hear this was like shortly after Patrick had been acting out. And
like a child.
I hear one of the people leaving.
It was 31 to 10.
Being like, you know, I'm glad someone has something in their life that makes them that happy.
Aww.
Like,
that
was, you know, I wish I was that into my
It's team. A little like, patronizing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is a little bit.
But that's okay.
It is.
And also, they were probably cutting their evening a little shorter than they'd intended. Oh, yeah.
I wish I enjoyed this evening as much as he enjoyed this football.
They don't even know which one we were looking at.
Yeah.
There were multiple games on.
True.
Although by the end of the night, it had all the TVs.
You weren't wearing
that's
that.
The game was so good.
I was not. I wore this because they won.
It's a celebratory shirt. Yes.
Can you pack it just in case?
Talk about.
I didn't bring my Bears festive jacket. I thought about it.
Video games.
Sure.
How long has this been, Connor?
It's been about 40 minutes.
That can't be true.
Keeping it tight.
No, it can't be. It can't be.
No,
That includes a story that's not going to get cut.
It's 20
right?
minutes.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Lead in.
Well, we're going to take a break. And then when we come back.
Wait, really?
We have to take a break.
Oh, okay. I mean, yeah,
do
sure.
We?
Yeah.
We do for ads.
Have breaks.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't
When we come back, we're going to talk about the greatest video games of the decade.
Hopefully it's not some foreign army. Let us know.
Oh, for the advertisement.
Yes.
Yeah, it could be. Let us know.
We'll get it flagged.
Happy holidays.
Depends on which foreign army.
Nope.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And we're back. So, as we've set up earlier this week, we have rules this year because Patrick insisted on it.
I did.
Because he's a dad.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no more 5-star run times.
Damn.
I can't believe you've done this. I can't believe.
This is the reaction I was going for, though. You doing this is exactly why I wanted to set the structure.
Natalie looks down and downtrodden.
I feel personally attacked. It's not my fault that sometimes I think more.
And you know what? True.
I say more.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
And maybe I talk longer.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with that.
There is nothing wrong with
Agreed.
That.
Agreed.
I think 30 minutes is bullshit. That is no time. That is time for me to say hello.
You're going to hear something really bad in a second.
What?
You actually only give 5 minutes.
What?
It's a 30-minute podcast. Well, 5, 10, 15, 20, 25.
But then we know there's topics that are not. So we're talking about games of the decade.
Yes.
And that means that we each have one of those.
Uh-huh.
And it means, to some degree, I'd like to talk about video games of the decade in, like, mm-hmm. a broader sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a 5-minute intro. Mm-hmm. So we're going to cut this 5 each.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't much.
Okay.
So
I'll go short.
I'll probably go short too. Well, we'll see what these games are, because there could be overlap. That's the other thing.
Right.
That's true. So, I have no idea what
and if you go short, you can
game are.
The time can be punted.
Right. Totally. So how do we want to start this? Do we want to start this with a general conversation, or do we want to start this with someone's specific game?
I think we should start with people's games, and then
and if we have
what,
time,
what was the takeaway
right.
from all, well, we will have by definition.
Right. We'll have at least 5 minutes. Kato.
I'm fucking
do
stressed.
We want
my first day fucking back. fucking stress me out.
All right, so I guess don't set it for 30 minutes. Just set it for 5.
Do you want to do what? Okay. All
and right. We'll just keep track of extra time if we have it.
Sounds good.
Do we? Well, we need to come up with a sound.
We do need a sound. Yeah, can we just get an air horn?
Sure.
Thank you.
I mean, we had one.
Yeah, it was. That was a good air horn.
I mean, thank honestly, you. Since this entire thing is about playing Natalie off,
wow.
You should just get, wow. That, get that track from the Oscars.
Can we get it? Can we get Kingdom Hearts?
That's still good.
That
that's
is still
really good.
Good.
Yeah.
Can you look up Kingdom Hearts sound effects? Just see what comes up.
I was at a ramen shop.
Is there like
shop
a Kingdom Hearts
day,
soundboard?
And they started playing.
When you are.
Yeah, what is the name of that song? Why am I blanking?
Simple and Clean.
Simple and Clean. And that put
no,
me
block
my feelings.
Block
I didn't think it would.
You clever little sneak.
Ew.
Who?
Fuck that. I hated that one. That's.
You really shouldn't have betrayed us.
Huh? That's good. Yeah, that's
that
good.
One.
That's good. That's
it.
Please, huh? Break it. Is there talking in the background?
I think so.
Huh? Hey,
Like, what the hell?
That's the sound huh? Patrick makes when Mitch Trubisky throws an interception, and the rest
in
of
the
you can hear
zone.
The rest
yeah.
of the in the red zone. You can hear the rest of the bar like chattering in the background.
Huh?
See?
Huh?
Huh?
That's our audience. We're in front of a live audience.
I thought you were saying that our audience is the ones going like, huh?
Oh.
Well.
Also that.
Yeah. All right. Patrick, these are your rules. I'm going to make you abide by them first.
Sure.
Yeah, I need an example of this.
Are you ready with the timer?
No. Yes. On your marks.
We've got to hit the sound.
Get set.
Huh?
Patrick Klepek, what is your game of the decade?
Wait, we were supposed to have picked these coming in?
Yes. One, two, three, four, five.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For me, it's Spelunky.
Yeah.
Which came out in what, 2013? 2014? I'm not sure exactly what year the Spelunky came out, if someone wants to look that up. Spelunky helped, like, is the same time that I played Dark Souls from start to finish. Those overlap entirely back to back. I was looking up the timestamp on this before we started recording. I was like, did I play Spelunky first or Dark Souls first? And I started playing Spelunky, and then it overlapped with me playing Dark Souls because my wife went on vacation. I was like, I'm actually going to play Dark Souls. Mm-hmm. She was gone for like a week and a half, and Dark Souls 2 is coming out in like a couple of months, and I wanted to be on that train and or at least figure out that game for myself. And both Spelunky and Dark Souls, what they have in common, and Spelunky, what they unlocked was like, those games are really hard and really punishing and like force you to abide by their rules. And so many games are about, no, like do what you want, like approach the game how you want. And like those were games that forced you to understand what they were doing and then work your way through them. And Spelunky was the game that I used to call games like Spelunky and Dark Souls, like, oh, they're punishing or masochistic. And it's like, I just don't get why people play these fucking games. And said in a derogatory sense. And then Spelunky was what unlocked for me, oh, I see. Like, I see the appeal of having a game that, like, slaps you on the wrist and says, maybe pay attention a little bit harder. Like, see what's going on here. I'm also noticing that Rob is just frantically Google searching, trying to figure out what game he's
going
to pick.
Excuse me. I am just methodically going through Wikipedia's blank year in video gaming articles.
Great.
And so the reason it's my game of the decade is, one, I think Spelunky has been deeply influential in ways that are maybe not as clear as a game like a Dark Souls or something where you can see like a very clear A to B on like where it impacted other games. But personally, it's my game of the decade because of how it changed my understanding of what I liked about video games. And it's like there are precious few video games where I can say like, oh, this changed how I looked at a medium and what I enjoy about it or what I can potentially enjoy about it. I don't know what Austin is doing either. He's listening to
his... I'm trying to listen. Don't worry about it. We're good.
Okay. And so that's why it's my game of the decade. Because it changed my perspective on games.
Yeah.
I don't know a higher compliment I can give than that.
It's interesting, too, that you highlight it's just about you and your experience with that game. It is not about the impact it had. It is not about, like, hey, this is part of a huge wave of roguelikes and roguelites that, you know, brought a whole bunch of new people into that
thing. I think
thing.
It did unlock it,
all that
it for a lot of people.
But for you, what it mostly unlocked was a type of play that let you then go back and play a bunch of other types of games that you just didn't.
It recontextualized other games for me. Like playing it alongside Dark Souls, like, makes total sense because those games are in concert in a lot of ways about what it's asking or pressing the player to do. And it's, you know, same way with like Monster Hunter. It is cool to become a fan of a new thing and to be excited alongside other people. Like, I get why you're excited. And I get to be one of those people too. And Spelunky just didn't do that for, you know, we've talked about our reservations with Spelunky too. And I don't know how excited I am for a sequel other than like a general sense. But what Spelunky unlocked was just, like you said, a style of play that is now compatible for me. And that opens up a whole range of experiences that otherwise I would have just, I outright dismissed. It wasn't just, it's not for me. I dismissed it. And in the same way, like our appreciation of Kingdom Hearts, even if I don't really like those games, mm-hmm. I now understand it and I appreciate that I understand it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I think that's under 5 minutes probably. Kato, where are we at in time?
Yeah, a minute left.
All right, so we have an extra minute.
6 minutes.
So can we keep, can you track of what we have in the bank?
Yeah.
I can do that too. That would let Kato focus on. Yeah.
Okay.
Else.
So we have an extra minute in the bank.
6 minutes right now total.
Plus one. Plus one. Fuck.
Also,
next,
people can engage with the conversation. Yeah, it's not just like you gotta. If you, I gotta keep talking for 5 minutes. Yeah, like, just to be clear.
So who wants to go next?
it's funny. I feel like I have a very similar reasoning for the
game.
Are
you going?
It sounds like you're going.
Yeah.
But I don't want to go.
Am I going?
Huh? All right, Kato.
Kato.
Hey. No, yeah.
What is your game of the decade?
For a similar kind of idea of like it made me become more aware or different, like look at games differently, Undertale.
Mm.
Game of the decade. The way that, and it's such a simple game, but the way that it integrated like pretty obviously like its mechanics with its ultimate like message and narrative was something that seemed so holistic in a way that I felt like a lot of games that I had played before, you can kind of see the like seams of gameplay and narrative butting up against each other a lot of times because of the way, like, you know, you tell story through cutscenes, right? Like, you're not playing that. And even though, like, Undertale has things that are similar to cutscenes, like places where you're not technically controlling it, something about the way that they kind of conceptualize the world as existing, the save system being kind of the all of the ways that it broke the fourth wall, and then also but then also within that told like really, really made you care about these characters, like made you like had good enough writing to hold up the belief that this world was something worth kind of protecting almost, right? Like by the end of that game, by the time you get through the last bits and you have like options to reset and stuff, like I could never. The only way I've ever replayed that game is on a different computer.
Yeah,
doing a new
I will never ever touch that game
exactly
again. It would feel like a betrayal of what I of the way that game went. For
exactly,
me.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that. Those people were happy, and I had to leave them alone to live their lives. Right, and this came at a moment where I was in grad school and kind of feeling stuck in a way, like thinking about my art making and like what my career would be, to the point where like I had always, and like I was at this point also making art about games, and I personally considered like certain aspects of games art in that fine art sense, but you know, it's like when you're outside of the sphere of critique, I was finding myself having those arguments of like, are games art, and like seriously considering it only for the like first time because of Undertale. Like before that, it was like, there's good and bad. Like you can critique things on like, you know, scales. I was into numbers, easily digesting like what this game is, and like it's all, you know, and that's because like there was that separation. Like, you know, in art school, you're not fucking. sorry.
I can track it for you.
There aren't numbers, but like numbers had been such a like thing for games growing up. Like sitting at the EGM, flipping through, like scrolling through, like this kind of, you know, the way that you could quantify games made them, you know, graphics and narrative,
sound,
and gameplay were all different things, right? And like it was such a it seems like such a simple thing, but the way that that game kind of integrated it all, like, finally clicked something in my head where I was like, oh shit, like, fucking games have been integrating these better than I've seen and felt or like understood before this game, but this is the one that like
that opened
did
that
it
up. Yeah.
That like made me feel it in a way where I was like, I should like re-examine the way I've been thinking about this medium as a whole.
Yeah, that's
I wouldn't be
what
here.
What a gift that is.
I wouldn't be here without Undertale. I wouldn't have even tried to like be in this sphere in the critic. Like, so that's why.
That's
where did you play it in the like the Undertale phenomenon arc? Like, once it already taken off, like you already knew the tricks to the game by the time you play it.
No, I didn't. I didn't know anything going in. I had like it had already blown up. It was out for a bit, enough that people were talking about it. And a friend of mine, shout out to Nikki Foley, who works at Nickelodeon, bought it for me. Like, aww. I wasn't even looking to like get it. She was like, "It's $10 here." Like, and it was I was in grad school. I didn't have any fucking money.
Of course.
So like, shout outs.
And here you are now.
Yeah,
that's a lovely arc to that story.
Yeah, that's a great arc.
I'm here because of Undertale.
Yeah. Undertale is definitely one of the ones I was debating in my head.
God damn it. What did you find? Is this like a broader one?
Yeah, this is okay.
What's under X?
Take this. Okay.
Take this is what you say when somebody makes a hot take at this table.
Yeah, that's true. What is this? Wow.
Oh, that is so good.
It's so good.
That is so good.
Oh my God.
That just fucking hit me so hard. Oh. I was about to fucking...
There's moments happening here in the studio.
Hopefully the energy came through the mic because there's a lot of crying
in the club happening in the studio.
Seriously.
Absolutely.
Who's up? Who's got something? Rob, have you scoured the internet enough?
Do you need more time?
I can go. If you need me to go.
Go for it.
Okay.
All right, hold on.
I'm holding.
Huh?
So I'm going to... I thought I had an answer this morning. That answer was going to be Breath of the Wild, which is probably my favorite video
that's what I would have
of
predicted.
The last decade. Yeah. But I realized, one, Waypoint has always been about all sorts of different types of play, not just video games. And two, if I think about what has been the game that I've kept coming back to the most in the last decade, I think if it's defined it, is a tabletop game, which is called Dungeon World by Adam Coble and Sage LaTorre.
The
one we played on the launch stream. Yeah, we played with Adam. Adam came and ran it. And if I could also do the thing that I suggested with around Spelunky, like I could have the conversation that is like, here's how this thing influenced, the genre of tabletop role playing games, or even I could have chosen a different one to be a little bit more specific. Apocalypse World by, D. Vincent Baker and McGuee Baker, is probably the one that is the most influential of the last decade of independent role playing games. It's like Dungeon World, a game that's like simplified, roles compared to the sort of like big successful games like Dungeons and Dragons, and you know, moved the sort of focus to a kind of collaborative conversational thing and did all sorts of great groundwork. But it was Dungeon World that I played the most. Dungeon World was the tabletop role playing game that was kind of the anchor of Friends at the Table, the podcast I launched like 5 years ago with a bunch of friends. We came back to Dungeon World every other year since then. So like I've been telling a story with Dungeon World for 5 years. It's a game that I think sells the promise of indie tabletop role-playing games really clearly, and it has been since it came out in 2012. It's a game that, instead of asking you to count individual arrows in your quiver, is only really cares when it's narratively interesting that you might be running out of ammo. It's a game that, you know, instead of having a huge, huge, huge list of spells, it really kind of boils down to what's interesting about casting a spell, about potentially losing touch with magic. It's a game that gives you the tools to tell stories that, even though it's still playing with familiar archetypes, you know, you pick a paladin, you pick a cleric, you pick a ranger, and it has all of the kind of like familiarity to that style of fantasy if you want it. It also gives you the freedom to describe what you do instead of look at your list of things you're allowed to do.
It's like tools instead of rules, if I
think I think like there are people in the tabletop space who'd be like, no, obviously not tools instead of rules, but that's exactly it.
But yeah, like
that's 100%.
It's like there it's a box to be in, but it's not a box to keep you contained.
Right. And I think one of the biggest things about these styles of games, in terms of running them and playing them with your friends, is that from the jump, the system is so clear that hacking it is something that's imaginable. You can make it yours. You can add new stuff to it because the basic dice mechanic is so simple.
Which is, right? You did a lot in terms of like, oh, we've got a bunch of newcomers who are right. Doing this. We're going to toss out some things so we can have some fun.
And you can do that with D&D, but there is a real argument to be made that unless you're playing the game, why play the game if you're not playing the game, right? This stuff is in there for a reason. We've done a lot of balance testing and blah, 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 blah. Dungeon World, Apocalypse World, the kind of powered by the apocalypse stuff, the stuff that's come after that, but influenced by it in a big way, carries forward this idea that, like, one, a game is a conversation. That is what it is. A hip-hop role-playing game is fundamentally a conversation between people, and the rules are there to kind of guide that conversation. And two, if you want to do something that isn't in this book, here are the ways to build that thing. You're going to be rolling two dice plus some amount of numbers. If you get over a 10, the good thing happens. If you get under a 6, a bad thing happens. If you get a 7 and 9, it's going to be complicated. And that's the other big thing that this style of game added was, like, no more hard no's. No more you don't get in the door where there's interesting stuff. No more I have to do 18,000 damage to the dragon. Like, the dragon's going to have 18 hit points. But how do you take 18 hit points off of a dragon is a really interesting, complicated thing in a world where regular, you know, weapons can't hurt a dragon. And it's like, okay, well, that's a narrative question, but it's being mechanized in a really interesting way. The other great thing about it, and the reason that it's my game of the decade, is I think to some degree answering what is the blank of the decade should almost have, like, it's done. It's the game of the decade because the decade is over now. And this can't be the game of the next decade, because when I look at the games that are coming out now, the stuff that is Forged in the Dark, which is another kind of subgenre of big tabletop games right now, the stuff that is Belonging Outside Belonging, there's like these new schools of thought that make Dungeon World almost antiquated. But it's an antiquated necessity. It's like a stepping stone to what comes next. It's opened up the door. It and Apocalypse World and the other games in that series, or that kind of subschool, have opened up the door for so many new types of game creators.
The same way about Spelunky, right? That's the whole reservation of Spelunky 2. Exactly. I don't know that I want Spelunky 2. I want the person who is inspired by Spelunky that makes something that genuinely surprises me.
Yeah. So that is it. That is my game, Dungeon World.
Wow.
Check it out. What's Woo. Good?
Literally seconds.
Yeah.
Woo.
Got it.
Woo.
Got all right, it memorized.
All right. Okay, do we need... hold on. So now we have two left.
Point to your head.
Natalie and Rob.
Rob, how are you feeling?
Rob, do you want to have
Natalie, is it too much pressure to go last? Would you feel better to go now?
Yeah.
Because I'm fine
be
putting
I don't
that to Rob.
The,
Rob,
have
Rob,
last.
Can,
Rob
be last.
Can be last.
Rob has last words.
True.
All right.
It's on Rob? The gloves.
Huh?
Okay, so my game, all of you guys have said things that make me want to change my game of the decade.
Do you want to talk through it?
Yeah. Okay, so first I thought about Undertale because I thought about like how moved I was by the end of that game.
Totally.
That was like an all-time great game playing experience, was watching you finish that.
That was like, that meant a lot to me. Then I thought about Breath of the Wild because Breath of the Wild is like, the number one game I think about while I play other games since playing it.
That's a really good way of putting it.
And it's like the number one game that has influenced the way I even play other games. Like, I feel like I am more exploratory in other games because Breath of the Wild.
It gave
taught
you universal
me
that. Verbs to interact with other games.
Yeah, totally. I think Breath of the Wild was one of those games that I genuinely wanted to be in that world. I genuinely wanted to I was watching how other characters were going about, you know, sort of their day and their business. I was like watching other lives go on around me in like kind of an immersive sim sense. But then when you're talking about like, I think there's elements of this in Breath of the Wild, but when you're talking about a game that has taught me to appreciate other games or has taught me to like open the door to other games, I think it's like a halfway split between Hollow Knight and Bloodborne, where those are like,
I see the crossover between those two.
There are like, those are two games, Hollow Knight at like in both a platforming and combat and like that sort of punishing gameplay and really needing to figure out mechanics and systems in order to, like, it's like mastery of mechanics in order to push through that game. It like, you can get by on the skin of your teeth, and you can do that with Bloodborne too. But for the most part, your success will come from mastery.
Yeah.
And that was just, I've said this before on podcasts, but that was just never a thing that I ever imagined myself enjoying right. or attempting in any games. But I think it comes from first having started Bloodborne. I was trying to think of what came first. Like, was it Hollow Knight or was it Bloodborne? And I think it was starting Bloodborne on the 8-hour stream that I was like, and having that as a social game that I was playing alongside you guys and alongside like our audience and Twitch chat and that kind of thing, that gave me the momentum to keep going. Because Hollow Knight is me doing it on my own, and Bloodborne was like me doing it in front of an audience. But I don't think I would have taken the first step if I wasn't like sitting on the couch with you guys.
And you got the motive. You realized you could do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, now I can take this, take it home.
Exactly.
And keep going.
Except that you didn't actually take it home and keep going, because your save was on the work PS4.
Yeah, you played the whole game on stream, right?
Yeah. All the way through. Yeah.
The whole game.
Those games
on
are
stream.
So much like perform. Like that game as performance is so much fun. Like, I enjoy streaming games like that because the audience interaction is like key to my enjoyment of it.
Yeah.
But also, it's a motivating factor. Like, I'm gonna do it for fucking them. Yeah. Get back in there.
Not for
kick that boss's ass.
Myself, who is a piece of shit for not getting this down, but for you guys.
I should have blocked. I'm sorry.
Shout outs to our community and also our mod team, which is like, because you can get a bad Bloodborne or Dark Souls audience.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Who is just cruel.
You should do that.
Yeah, fuck off.
And,
no.
And shout outs to. The two people that came and helped me beat the final.
That was so great.
Which was in the middle of
rest
the fucking
in peace, big
night.
Boy.
That was amazing.
Rip, big boy. What a big. Well, yeah, big. Big did you beat the final boss?
Yeah. Done.
You got the total full true
it's
ending.
Absolutely done. Yeah.
Did the damn
we
thing.
We finished.
Congrats.
So I think those two games are games that taught me that I could play any game.
Yeah.
Like I could genuinely find enjoyment in any type of game. Which I just never really expected. I like really confined myself to like a box of like, these are what I'm allowed to play and what I'm allowed to
enjoy. As you get older, that's like natural. It's like, oh, this is what I like. I'm gonna go find more what I like. And like, it's so mm-hmm. satisfying to like, oh, actually there's a different box, mm-hmm. a different set of tools I can be playing with.
Totally. So yeah, I think those are all the ones that came
that's
to mind.
Good.
I'm sorry I brought four.
That's fine, but
no,
there's a through line.
Waypoint.
It's not look.
Also,
there are rules, but
Breath of the Wild has
tools,
element.
Not rule.
Tools. There you go.
That's the time limit. Is a tool. The structure is a tool.
Mm-hmm. Even Breath of the Wild, I think, has elements of it, because there are genuinely difficult moments in Breath of the Wild that I think in previous Zelda games were okay. It's like a puzzle I have to beat.
Yeah.
But in Breath of the Wild, fuck.
Axel.
No!
You can finish your line.
Finish your line.
Okay. In Breath of the Wild, like, you can brute force your way through the beginning in a way that, like, if you really just get that system, you can understand how to push through. So I think there's elements of the...
Totally.
Best of winning of a video game of the decade, Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, so I think...
You walk out on that fucking plane and you get out of that cave.
So yeah, that's why I think I would say if I had to say one, I would say it's Breath of the Wild. Yeah. That has elements of all the
of
things.
Of all that stuff.
Yeah. So,
we've come down to it, Rob Zachney.
Rob,
this was hard.
Rob takes a beer into his hand.
The panic he had when he wait, what? We had to come up with
how?
Are you ready?
That's my job to forget.
There was that was on the nose, right? I mean, we didn't gain any time. Okay, 6 minutes left after Rob's
soliloquy.
All right.
Wait, we need a hold on sound effect.
Hold on.
Starting a timer.
Huh?
Put 5 minutes on the clock, Mo.
You sending a text?
Yeah, sorry. Okay. We're good.
You up?
No.
Oh, my God.
I mean, she is, but...
Huh? What's...
All right, we're live.
Exactly, we're live.
So I've said before that, like, it takes a long time for me to know how I feel about something. Like... Mm-hmm. My feelings about things are fundamentally mysterious to me.
We had this conversation this morning even.
Yeah, and like years later, I will be surprised by what resonated with me, it turns out. Like what is it of all the things that happened to you 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Those are the memories that are happiest. Those are the memories that grieve you the most. I'm always surprised by what they are, because they're never the ones I would have picked. So a lot of games, like I was sort of wrestling with this, because there's games that I know had a huge impact on me. Like strategy games like Europa Universalis IV kind of changed my relationship to what strategy games could or should be. The arrival of the new XCOM series in this decade brought an entire genre back into being almost and created a lot of imitators that I've really enjoyed. It's and has generated some of my favorite memories of like cooperative play. But as I look over like games of this decade, I was really surprised to sort of realize that a lot of the things that still hit me the hardest were from very early in the decade. And I kept returning to two games that surprised me because they're not the games that I would be like, here, let me show off my critical taste by like dropping these on you.
No, yeah, yeah.
The two games I kept returning to were BioShock 2 and The Witcher 2.
Ooh.
And I think the thing these things both have in common is they're both refinements in some ways or progressions of what the original games are trying to do. But they're not burdened with expectation or scale. And I think in many ways this is the story of the decade. Is there's so many good ideas that just get all these expectations like weighed on them.
We were just talking about Far Cry 3, 4, and 5 in the immersive sim episode very briefly.
Right. You can't just have a good idea. You can't just tell a good story. Mass Effect 2 comes out in a similar era.
Yeah.
Mass Effect Andromeda, again, wrestles with this. It can't just be a good Mass Effect story. It has to be this blown out new launch of the second half of this IP. Yeah. And I return to these games a lot because I think they are both about wrestling with mistakes in some ways, and they both have a lot of sadness in them. And that's my shit. Mm-hmm. I love games that sort of you're the hero, but like your ability to be a hero, your ability to set the world right is realistically limited. And both of those games sort of struggle with that. I think my heart is with like BioShock 2 because the end of that game, when it sort of reveals what it's really been about, is it's not about you. It's what your moral code passes on into the world, right? Like you are the role model for the most powerful kid in existence, right? The person who's going to take all the power that was seized in Rapture. Mm-hmm. And like, what is she going to be? She could be, you know, awful, or she could be sort of a merciful goddess. And in some ways, like what it is, how you are reacting to the people that have wronged you, how you are wielding your right to vengeance versus the call to mercy. That's what the game hinges on. And the way it pays off in the third act remains one of my favorite moments of this decade.
Minerva's Den too, right? BioShock 2.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think ultimately I liked The Witcher 2 just a bit more because to me it's the perfect Witcher game.
Yeah.
It's not so fucking big, but it is. But it is about.
But it is big.
But it is big. It's a big game and some big ideas. It is about literally the presence of history that like half the game is spent. You are walled off from progressing by the spectral battle that is being waged from a war that was fought decades earlier.
Right. Well, and it's the bigness from that game is almost it's meant to dwarf you. It's meant to say. I quoted the 18th Brumaire earlier. Men make their own history, but they don't always choose how they make it. And like, there are limits to what you. It needs to suggest a bigness, a breadth of the world, like you said, a historical weight.
You're a player in history, but you are not history.
Exactly, exactly.
And it ends tragically. The things you are trying to prevent, you cannot prevent. The evil people that you identify and you try to stop from carrying their plans to fruition, you cannot fully stop. History has momentum that is beyond you.
It sounds like Final Fantasy 14, 255.
And in the end of that game, it's very much just about what can I salvage from this? Who, like, what can I preserve? What can I live with? What are the personal obligations I've kept? And I think it is probably the strongest, most distilled version of The Witcher. It's like everything that was cool about The Witcher 1.
Witcher 1's pretty fucking broken.
That's a hard game to go back. But you see where I was pointing.
It was pointing to
The Witcher 2. Yes. The Witcher 3.
You can finish your thought.
Yeah. So I think The Witcher 2 is kind of representative of this moment of people who had large ambitions but productively limited means. And I think the story of this decade is
that.
the means begin to, like, you either don't get the means at all, yeah, or they begin to scale beyond your beliefs.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I know how
Cyberpunk.
I know how Waypoint worked. Oh, you know, Cyberpunk. I thought you don't get the resources you need to achieve.
Well, the opposite of that is, no, it's cyberpunk.
Yeah, exactly. It's
like all the resources in the
world. Let's start a 6-minute clock for this final open table.
Give us a really bad sound effect.
Give us the best one.
Bad or best?
Yes.
Best.
Those are both not necessarily. Yeah.
We're talking about.
Well, that was like half our time right there.
Where's the other one? Where's the one that made everyone hype?
Oh, this one?
You were early. You were early. There it is. You missed it. The true game of the decade.
I just realized, by the way, the way we've recorded all this, we have no plan for how they're going up.
Not at all.
We
it
have
might
basically
end
done
up being
her,
chronological.
We have done her story. We've done her story of Waypoint Podcast.
Yeah. There was like, hold on, you haven't started the timer yet.
No, I haven't.
My favorite's going to be is that we record a podcast where Austin gave early impressions of a MechWarrior game, in which next week we'll record a podcast where he records updated impressions of a MechWarrior game.
Because a patch has hit since my last time.
He'll play another 10 hours in between then and that. It's just wonderful. It's what good. A great.
We should just release everything line by line, like Hearst, like just, you know, a complete grab bag. That'd be great.
Okay.
2010.
Cut that game together.
Cut, please. That's all. That's light work.
Yeah.
Right?
Jesus Christ.
We'll give you like next week. Well, half of next week. Glad you agree.
2010 to 2019 has been a really interesting set of years for games. I think there's a lot of like mechanical stuff we could talk to or like industrial.
They're finally art.
Right. Yeah.
We made it.
Protected by the Supreme Court in that decade.
That's true. We've hit a situation, I think, where there feels like there's a new normal in terms of the, like, how do you play your games and where do they show up? And with a rare exception, past the point of exclusives being the thing that drives conversations and drives, say, like, people are just talking about games. And we have a really, really, really lively independent scene. You think about like the early 2010s coming off of the XBLA stuff, that era of like the like proto auteur, the indie game, the movie like generation of game designers to now where there are countless game designers trying their hand. My biggest question is like, what is the takeaway for making video games in the 2010s? Like, is it sustainable? Is it healthy that we have that I can open Steam any day and get 100 new games that have shown up?
Too many games. There are, like,
is that true,
like,
or is that
no?
Music?
But I mean, in with like, what's the term for a peak TV? Right. Yeah. Like, I think at the end of this decade is we are now in peak game, in which you can't play everything. You have to choose. You have to pick and choose. Realize you can't be part of every conversation. Like, I think this is from like a.
Yeah.
A critical perspective. Just like you just can't. It used to be the case that if you were playing games, you could play all the big games, play in chronological order, like you could keep up with games. That is just not the case.
Yeah. Anymore. And also, I've never felt like the power of like hegemonic culture more, because there's so many small things that I don't even hear about until they've already had their run inside of a small community somewhere. Right. Like, oh yeah, you didn't play such and such a thing. Like, I didn't know it existed. And I'm trying my best to keep up.
Right.
I feel like there was almost previous to like the 2010s, there were like everyone played every single game that was coming out. Like, you were always kept up
on every magazine cover, every commercial. Yeah, this is the game. Right. This is video game time.
Yeah. And now I feel like it's okay to be in your own kind of space and to be like, I know what I like, and it's not necessarily genre defined, but it's like maybe mechanic defined or narratively defined, or maybe it's like I like a certain subsection of like types of development or things like that. I feel like there's
a bigger audience for smaller communities too, right? I think that is like, the rise of itch.io, like the rise of just you can be into a thing, and it used to be like no one else is into that. There's no community that's going to buy this. There's no community that's going to build around it. And that's just less true these days. Like, there are lots of communities and lots of people with like varied interests, and it doesn't mean it's perfect. Like, obviously, it's still mean it's, fucked up. The, all those labor problems, like exasperation of labor problems, is not the crunch didn't exist in the 70s and 80s and 90s, but boy, is it 1,000 times worse now at the scale that games are made. That is,
and there's also now the other thing is like with the hope of independent developers trying to make it big, there's lots of people taking out personal loans, and there's like, there's the fact that the market has opened up and that there are better tools also has made it, you know, more and more likely that people are going to go deep into their own debt to try to follow that dream. I think we
benefit from problem of indie
it.
Game, the movie. Yes, it's exactly. Like, I'll just make the game and then I'm rich.
And then I'm rich, which is like not
it's like,
the
well,
case.
One, no. And then two, also those games, not exclusively, but like there used to be a thing called, the Steam front page used to be basically if your game goes on the front page of Steam, you're rich.
Yeah.
And that was in the era of Super Meat Boy and Braid. That's not why those developers did as well as they did. Those were great games. Braid's okay.
But yeah.
But that doesn't exist anymore, right? Like, right. Even if you use, like, Steam as a representative of, like, how things have changed over the years, like, it no longer means anything. It doesn't mean nothing, but it's not the way it used to be.
But there's so much, there's a contention there. There's, like, indie developers just trying to make stuff and put it out there. And then there's also this, like, saturation of, like, the capitalism machine that is just the mm-hmm. churn of like what's gonna hit, and it's like the almost algorithmic with real human labor behind it, but it's like it's the stuff on Steam that nobody will ever see but is like being churned out constantly by like these larger companies. And I think of like mobile games that are like just churning out like something that they hope will hit.
Which is, like, complicated because, like, we know, for instance, there are people I know who work in the mobile game sphere doing really good writing work on the mm-hmm. sorts of games that we will never cover mm-hmm. at Waypoint.
No, like,
we don't
Apple Arcade comes on, like, new good games again. And then, like, I heard from a couple of people, like, actually, there's still some good stuff happening out there. It's just hard to find. People don't usually write about it. You know, it's just a...
If I can change the subject, because I know we only have a second or two left.
How much time do we actually have left?
49 seconds.
Okay.
Quickly, once around, are there games we forgot about or games that we...
No, this is separate. We can do this separate.
We can?
I will give us 5 minutes for games that we...
Thank you for the tools, not rules. No rules, just right. Outback. Sponsored by Outback. We're not sponsored by Outback.
But if they want to get in touch...
give me a ring.
Go for a fucking Bloomin' Onion.
Kata was talking about Red Lobster earlier today.
I fucking around with a Red Lobster.
Fucking those biscuits. I don't even care about any seafood biscuits.
Yeah. All right.
I forgot. So when we wrote out the document, it was subplot.
Yeah.
Games you forgot...
Were this decade.
That were this decade.
Yeah.
I don't have one off the top of my head.
But
Rob does. The one that got me.
Our 5 minutes.
Five minutes on the clock for this one. I'm fine. Thank you.
Cool. The one that made me think that was a good discussion point was Human Revolution. Deus Ex Human Revolution. Yeah. I was like, that was this decade.
Right.
There were two of them, Rob.
I will never forget that game because I was writing my master's thesis when it came out, and I wouldn't let myself play it until my master's thesis was submitted. And let me tell you, it took long to write that thesis. I like... had it on the shelf for a month before I was allowed to play it, and it was all right.
Yeah, it was good. Like, yeah. It was all right.
Yeah,
like,
it was a scratch and itch video game. Yes. Yeah, I loved playing it, and then it was just like, forgot. Couldn't tell you anything about that game other than, I didn't ask for this. Like, that's the only thing, the enduring legacy.
The ending stuff, the, like, choice at
it
the very end.
It did some good stuff. Like, I don't want to, like, pretend like it wasn't.
No.
It was sort of a... It was there.
I mean, I think the game is actually better than we give credit for being. It is ahead of its time in that, like, the main character you work for, Seraph, is this, like, titan of industry, like, visionary genius who is revealed to be a petulant, cowardly child.
Wait, what's the name of the character in Eliza? That you sided
Rainer.
With. Rainer. Oh, okay.
But Rainer's legit.
Mm-hmm.
shout out to
Rainer. That podcast.
But like, so Seraph is a petulant, like cowardly child.
Mm-hmm.
And, like your girlfriend who is abducted in the initial attack turns out to be an engineer who cares so much more about the work than what it's being used for that her moral compass has been completely kicked out the window. Mm. I think keeps that game from making more lists is that final act, the choices it leaves you, are so lacking in nuance and understanding of the themes the game itself has been bringing up.
Yeah,
it's just like, I have no idea what to do with this. And I think that's one of the game's major failures, as is its failure to imagine lives beyond the walls.
Do you know what one of the
society.
Running theories is? So they never made the third game. And so the second game, there is a woman in red. I believe this is right. A woman in red that you constantly see in the second game. And the theory is that you were playing a clone in the second game. You are not playing as Jensen. Like, he dies in the first game, and he's been cloned in the second game. And there's some lady in a red dress that is, like, you come across an apartment at some point. They never, you know, finished that third game because the second game didn't do that well. But, yeah. I liked that game a lot. Like, it's...
Yeah.
You're right, and it sells it short to say, like, oh, they just made another one of those. Like, that's not easy. Like, even just doing that is hard. And I enjoyed my... time with it. It was just by the time the second one came around, it was like we got to do something a little bit different.
We have to change it up.
And the second one revealed that you just can't do that again. Also, remember when they made like that Thief game?
I do. And I, you know what I heard after the fact that like it maybe got a bad rap? Not that it was good. Not that it was great.
Wasn't as bad as.
But, yeah.
But that game also came out this decade.
It did. And definitely don't remember that.
Yep.
What else? Anyone else have a thing that's like you forgot that this was a game that you cared about at some point?
Doesn't have to be cared about. Just a game you're looking at a list and you're like, that came out in 10 years?
That came out?
So looking at Portal 2, like just thinking now about, you know, like Valve returning to Half-Life and like that was basically the last narrative game they made and that was 2011.
And now here we are.
And now here we are.
Half-Life Alyx.
I liked Portal 2 quite a bit. One of my favorite videos to ever be a part of was doing the co-op missions with Ryan Davis on a stream. Boy, people were mad. People don't like to watch people play puzzle games. You know what they'll do? Watch it anyway and get mad about it.
They absolutely will. Anyone else have a game of the decade that you forgot?
Red Dead Redemption and Red Dead Redemption 2 came out in the same decade.
Is
2010
that true?
And then 2018.
2010, yeah.
Wow. Yeah,
it's super weird.
I didn't realize that Minecraft was in this decade.
I don't think it is. I think that's wrong.
What? Really? No, that's got to be this decade.
2010.
No, I think that is right.
When did Hakune Mitsu make Minecraft?
Maybe you're right. You're right. 2011.
Yeah.
Wow.
Probably the biggest game of the decade, bar none.
Feels older.
Yeah, I can't
absolutely
imagine a game bigger than Minecraft in the 2010s.
Skyrim, 2011.
Also, big year, big game.
New Vegas,
we already talked about.
New Vegas,
Honestly, Fortnite.
I was going to say
not
Fortnite.
Like
not even close. It's not even close, y'all.
Like, really? Like, numbers-wise? No, like, amount of players is...
Apps of people who have played.
Are we talking about compared to Minecraft?
Minecraft?
No. I wouldn't say
versus Fortnite.
I would say those two are probably
the biggest two
are of
2010s.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's probably right. Maybe I'm wrong also, but maybe I'm wrong. The total number per.
But not to me. Like I don't know. Fortnite hasn't defined things for me.
The stuff that it feels like it's defining is in terms of one of the other big turns of the decade.
Battle Royale.
No, it's not even just
games as service.
Games as service. 100%. It's the move from here's a product you buy on a shelf to why are you buying anything? Like,
oh, and also the experience you had will go away.
Yeah, 100%.
This just
will
ephemeral.
Not be here.
Remember that map that you started with? That's gone.
That's gone.
You'll never see
I
that
I feel
again.
Like that's so telling of like Even ownership of games.
Yes.
Like,
100%.
Not only do you not own the games you're playing, you don't even own the type of gameplay you're playing in the game. I mean,
you can't return to it.
Yeah.
If you really like that mech season of Fortnite, it's gone. It's not going to come
back.
People really didn't like it. I didn't even play it, so what the fuck do I know?
Also, Grand Theft Auto 5 came out in 2013, but that game is still alive and well and getting all sorts of new content regularly.
Huge. Huge game.
Take this!
Any final thoughts?
Take.
So when we were discussing the earlier thing about trends and what the next decade looks like, Austin, you and I were talking about this on Discord a few weeks ago, but about I was going back to the 2005 GDC rant session.
Oh, yeah.
And it's where Greg Costigan gives his My Friends, We Are Fucked speech as he talks about like what the HD era is going to do for budgets and teams and how it's going to stifle innovation.
The case he basically makes is that like HD games are very expensive. It's expensive to make high-res assets, and that means that the developers
will never be able to increase font sizes.
Never, ever, ever.
Well, but also he said, and he's like, and they're going to carve some of the expense out of you.
Right.
Yeah.
He's like,
you're
like your labor is going to, it's 80-hour work weeks.
You're
all
going
down.
To, they're going to become more risk-averse because it's so expensive.
And in that rant session, other things that were raised by other people, Jason Della Roca commented that he felt like games were xenophobic to other ideas from outside the games and programming spaces. Mm. That like there were like it was kind of shocking to me to go like read this rant session from 2005,
right?
And like this
15
was
years later.
Correct then. It remained correct, and I feel like heading in this new era, we are still like conditions in a lot of ways have gotten a little bit worse. I think, and we are still sort of in this industry sleepwalking toward the further like triumph of capital and
visibility is better
classes.
About the problems, but that doesn't mean the problems are any already closer to being solved.
It's the thing that is like so difficult. There's like two things. One is not just visibility. Organization is happening, right? Yep. We know that Game Workers Unite exists. We know that like across the world there have been pushes towards better worker organization, towards holding companies accountable.
Riot Games is about to pay $10 million out.
Totally. I wish it was more, but it is what it is.
Yep.
The other, and I think that's a basic positive and opens the door to a potential larger scale action. I don't know that I see the industry being reformed. I can imagine it blowing up, I guess, and that is what it might take to be reformed and rebuilt in a different way. And the other half of it that is like when I think about the decade or when I think about going forward, I think I will never live again in a world where people like me aren't making video games. And that fucking slaps. There were going to be black queer people making video games for the rest of my life. It's not that they were not there to begin with, but they certainly weren't in leadership roles. And I don't know if they'll be in leadership roles in the AAA space in the future, but I will be able to go to sites like itch.io. I will be able to open my phone and find that stuff. And it is the double bind of like, that doesn't mean that those people are going to be making a living off of it. It doesn't necessarily mean that even they won't be changed by the machine that wants to incorporate what they do. And this is not like the argument that like representation is more the most important thing. But actually, I'm not even talking about representation. I'm talking about like people getting paid and paying their rent off this and having their voices slowly affect the medium. And it is so hard to – it is hard to imagine a 2020s where the sorts of deeply white, homophobic, misogynistic games release without a peep. It's hard to imagine, like, a lot of people talk about the BioShock Infinite launch and that, like, yes, like, was there criticism of BioShock Infinite at launch? Some people are like, no, there was never any. But of course there was. It was in the corners of the world that you weren't paying attention to because all you did was read huge mainstream game sites.
And it wasn't until that, like, added into a culmination of a backlash a couple of months in where it was like, oh, I guess people have problems with this game. It's like, well, people always had problems. And also they weren't at mainstream outlets.
Right. When BioShock 3 comes out, when Ken Levine's next game drops, if it steps on those same landmines, those conversations are going to happen at IGN. Those conversations are going to happen at GameSpot.
Yep.
Like, those conversations are going to happen in people's Twitter feeds, are going to happen on Facebook, are going to happen on Twitch. And it's going to be a mess because the other side of that conversation is going to be all of the toxic, terrible shit that we didn't talk about Gamergate. We didn't talk about Trump's election. We didn't talk about just like the unearthing or the uncovering or the revelation, the sort of like we turned the opacity slider down on exactly how gross shit was for a lot of folks who didn't know that already. To be clear, a lot of folks absolutely knew that already, but that's revealed itself in the last decade. And if there is one little tiny piece of hope that I have, it is that a lot of people know better. Mm-hmm. I don't think Waypoint Radio exists a decade ago where we can talk openly about this stuff, period. And like the fact that
I don't know that I necessarily knew enough to even speak to it. Like I totally, as someone that was part of the machine,
I know,
grew up in the machine.
Yes.
Like was around Egg Giant Bomb when BioShock Infinite came out. Our problems with that game were not any of that stuff. I was reading Lee Alexander. I was reading that stuff. But like I am a living testament to how that stuff changes as part of the machine and the impact folks like yourself and others being in that machine can, you know, it's not a perfect machine, but it changes it in the direction of, at the very least, awareness and like people trying to be conscious of what they didn't know and trying to do better.
I think a lot about Alex Navarro inviting folks from Game Workers Unite onto the E3 couch this year. That's a small thing. That's not a big ask on the part of Alex to do that, but that he does that is a thing that's like, let people sit in front of you and explain what is necessary to change labor conditions in this industry. Like, open those doors, have those conversations, slowly push the culture. My hope is that the 2020s continue to do that, even if my belief is that, like Costigan says, like, we are fucked. I just hope that we are...
The other part of Costigan's speech that we forget is he says, it doesn't have to be this way.
Right.
He calls for, we should be rioting in the streets of Redwood City. And tellingly, there's not any studios in Redwood City anymore.
Nope.
But I think the point is, the system only works if you are willing to be lubricant in the gears rather than sand.
Yeah, totally. So, as we tend to say around these parts, we'll be back tomorrow with some more. But until then, fuck capitalism. Go home. Thank you.
But we can't because we have to record one more podcast.
I'm gonna run to the bathroom.
We'll take a real break.
We'll take a real break.
Which one are we leading off with?
Game of the Decade.
Game of the Decade.
All right, cool.
Ready?
So, right. So, the way this is going to work is...
Don't tell me how this is going to work.
There's a format.
The first...
we'll explain the format. Wow. I was like, we should explain the format once we start doing it.
Okay, that's
Let
fine.
Me do like a quick intro. Yeah.
Wait. Okay.
What?
Yeah, I got the timer. Okay,
thank
cool.
You.
Okay. I can't believe this. I can't believe I'm being fucking timed.
Well, yeah, but don't start the timer yet.
Yeah.
Because I have to do an intro.
We'll let you know when the timer starts.
Did you send your time sheet?
Yeah. Okay. Did you?
Yes.
No one, they don't make us.
No one asking me?
No one's asking. Did you send your time sheet? You just send one in.